Dreams. Want them or not, we all have them, even when we think we don't. There are countless hypotheses about why we dream, from processing emotions to keeping the neurons in the brain's visual cortex active. While dreams remain largely a mystery, what happens when those dreams seep into the realm of reality? Benoit Garnier, a self-proclaimed gamer, was lost in a dream where he was engaged in heavy lip action with Aoife McCloud, a character from the JRPG game Cloud Forest that he played non-stop. He was loving life until his phone's alarm went off, rousing him from the dream. He cursed when he realized that Aoife was nothing more than a figment of his imagination. But when he rolled to the side, he saw Aoife next to him. Her large blue anime eyes were staring at him. Then she began to kiss Benoit, slipping her tongue into his mouth. Benoit, not knowing whether he was dreaming or if Aoife was real, started to feel up his video game goddess. However, instead of smooth skin where her thighs and buttocks should have been, he felt coarse hair reminiscent of a Brillo pad. He opened his eyes. In front of him was no longer a beautiful elf woman, but rather a large spider with 8 eyes staring at him. Before he could scream, the spider used its fangs to rip Benoit's skull open and feast on his brain. I'm Agent Kai, and I've decided to make my reports for Lives in the form of a podcast. My hope is that you, dear listener, will discover the truth of this world and open your eyes to it.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The village of Le Ciel was nestled deep within Pimpont Forest, on France's Brittany Peninsula. It was a quaint place, with hundreds of stone buildings and cobblestone roads and bridges. As I sauntered through the empty streets and the endless fog that seemed to haunt the town, I couldn't help but wonder what kind of place this was, especially after reading the village's motto, Life and Death Sculptor. Yet she breathes harmony. As I crossed a bridge with a serene-sounding river beneath, a river concealed in fog, I heard the scream of a woman up ahead. The woman was backing away from a man in a beige overcoat. Edwin Itodema. The man, partially covered in fog, ignored the woman's pleas to leave. His arms were reaching out toward her as he stepped out of the fog. I could see his face and head were melting off. Skin and hair and bone dripped down his coat and onto the cobblestones. I pulled out a folded dream catcher and unhooked the strap, keeping it locked. Then I threw it in front of the melting man. The dream catcher opened up and grew to about the size of a manhole cover. Once the melting man stepped on it, he fell into the dream catcher's net and disappeared. Et tout va bien, I said. Vi je suis, merci, she said. The woman glanced at me. You are the monster hunter? Oui, I said. The name's Nicholas Corbin. The woman smiled. Je suis Violette Lacroix. Nice to meet you, Monsieur Corbin. We are so happy you are here. The villagers of Le Ciel, dear listener, were under the impression that Nicholas Corbin was a world-renowned cryptozoologist with experience in ridding places of unwanted creatures, cryptid or otherwise. Blade, once again, did an outstanding job of fabricating this legend. And it was Violette Lacroix who had reached out to Corbin via Instagram. Her direct message was one of desperation. Monsieur Corbin, I have read through your Instagram and website and I am requesting your help. My village, Le Ciel, has been cursed. Je ne sais pas how our quiet town has turned against us. When we sleep and dream, our dream somehow becomes a reality. A beautiful and heartwarming at first, but not long after, our manifested dreams become cauchemar. You are our last resort. I beg you, please help. Not long after that message, I began my investigation of Le Ciel by reading through the intelligence reports. After several hours of reading and analyzing, I geared up and began my journey to Le Ciel. Madame Lacroix, I said, where are the inhabitants of your village? Come, I'll take you to them. I followed Violette through the narrow streets and toward a dilapidated building that once stood proud as a cathedral. You are not concerned with what you saw? Violette said. The melting man? I am concerned, I said. However, I've seen many strange and disturbing things in my line of work. Once you start growing familiar with the odd, strange sights do not faze you. Fantastique! That is good news to hear. Violette stopped a few feet from the cathedral's entrance. Monsieur Corbin, she said, tucking a strand of brunette hair behind her ear. I fear I must warn you now, and apologize to you as well. I was not entirely honest with you in my message. I nodded and crossed my arms. How so? I was truthful when I said you are our last resort, Violette said. We tried calling the gendarmes, scientists, and even priests, and they all came to help, but they all failed to help our village. Violette paused for a moment. You see, Monsieur Corbin, once you enter this village, you cannot leave it. What do you mean? We've all tried to leave. I, myself, have tried to leave several times. But what happens is that you will wander the forest for hours in the fog until you finally see a clearing, and that clearing is Le Ciel. Violette ran her hand down her face. I once tried following the path in that I've known my whole life outside the forest by crawling to avoid the fog. It was working, but then when the forest should have ended, I ended up in Le Ciel. Violette wasn't lying, dear listener. She was telling the truth. Before my departure to Le Ciel, local French intelligencers had confirmed that there were several people from various professions missing. From Paris, Detective Gerald Reno. From Oxford, Dr. Rosamond Carter, physics professor. And from Vatican City, Father Cyprian Evander. I'm sorry, Violette said. I should have told you beforehand, but I feared you wouldn't help otherwise. Did you tell the others who you reached out for help? Do they know? Violette nodded. I did, to Detective Reno. He didn't believe me. Dr. Carter and Father Evander, I didn't. But either way, when they all got fed up with our nightmares, they tried to leave, and they're still here. It's an interesting situation you have here, I said. You're not angry? Violette said, her brown eyes tired. I shook my head. No, you were afraid, and in a strange situation. Anyone would have done the same. I started for the cathedral. Let's go see what we can do. The remaining villagers had all gathered in Ciel Cathedral. It was a small building compared to other holy structures bearing the title. However, despite its smaller size, the church was welcoming. There was a strong aroma of coffee that lingered in the air. Plastic cups littered the ground and pews, and several of the villagers were busy downing more coffee. Violette informed me that there were many villagers who were not present. Those unfortunate souls had died, consumed by their nightmares. In fact, Violette said, if any person were to fall asleep and dream, and this included those inside the cathedral, their dreams would manifest themselves in reality. And, while just a dream at first, those dreams would decay and turn into nightmares. Then they would consume the dreamer before vanishing. all the villagers here in the cathedral helped each other stay awake. Some villagers had gone 2 weeks without sleep, while others who went past those 10 days succumbed to death. Violette, in private, told me that she would use the excuse of going outside to find more coffee or anything that would help keep people awake and sneak into her house and go to sleep. Of course, she'd dream and her dream would manifest itself in reality. Then she would run out into the woods. She'd found that the dreams, or rather nightmares, evaporated into the fog and disappeared once you were out in the forest. That's what she was doing when I bumped into her, making her way into the forest fog. However, despite the bit of sleep she snuck in, she couldn't remain asleep for long. She couldn't let her dreams consume her, and fighting off an enemy that never relents is exhausting. I could see the lethargy on all the villagers. The raccoon eyes and blank gazes gave them away. "Everyone, please listen," Violette said, taking her position on the podium. "Monsieur Nicolas Corbin has joined us. He is a cryptozoologist." There were lots of sighs at the mention of my legend's profession. "I believe he can help us escape whatever is happening here." Violette smiled at me. "When I was out looking for coffee, I fell asleep." Gasps and whispers echoed throughout the cathedral. "Oh, Monsieur Corbin saved my life. A nightmare was closing in on me. I thought that was it. I was dead. But no, Monsieur Corbin destroyed the nightmare and saved me." Silence fell across the cathedral. "And how did he do that?" Dr. Rosamond Carter said, taking a sip of her coffee. "I do not know," Violette said. I joined Violette on the podium. She stepped aside and allowed me to speak into the microphone. "Hello, everyone," I said. "I'm Nicolas Corbin. I've studied the strange and unknown my whole life, and what's happening here is something I've never seen before, but I have heard about it." "How'd you kill that nightmare?" Rosamond said. "I used an old trick created by Spider-Woman, Dreamcatcher." Detective Reno, a man with a bulbous nose, said, "Can you use that Dreamcatcher to get us out of here?" I shook my head. "No, I'm afraid not." "Of course not," Father Evander said. "We have all sinned, and now we are being punished. We must accept our fate."
"Oh, for the love of God," Rosamond said. "Enough of your sins and punishment crap." She turned to me. "You, what's your name again?"
"Nicolas Corbin."
"Yes, Mr. Corbin. Can you actually help us out? I mean, no offense to your chosen profession, but honestly, I'm not a believer in cryptids."
"Are you a believer in strange situations?" Reno said. "Cause what do you call what we're in now?"
Rosamond stared at Reno with narrow eyes.
"Listen," I said, "I'm not here to make any promises, but I will do my best to understand what's taking place here and get us all out of it." I paused for a moment.
"May I speak to you, Dr. Carter, Detective Reno, and Father Evander?" The four of us, including Violette, all made our way into the priest's chambers, located on the side of the main hall of the cathedral. It was a small room filled with cobwebs and a Bible that hadn't been touched in ages on an old wooden desk. We squeezed ourselves into the room. Once we were settled, I began to ask everyone what they knew or had discovered about the fog in the village. Detective Reno disclosed that he didn't know much as to what was going on with the fog, but was convinced that a villager among them was responsible for the event, as he called it. He had observed and analyzed the villagers' relationships with each other and concluded that several of them were quite disgruntled and did not get along.
"Whatever was going on here in La Sierra," Reno said, "I bet it was witches. There has to be witches among the villagers."
"Mon Dieu," Violette said.
"You do not really believe in such a thing?"
Reno nodded.
"Of certitude. I've always heard stories of this forest. Strange things happen in Pompon Forest. Witches casting spells."
"Oh, Christ. Again with this supernatural bullshit," Rosamond said.
"Give a break, Reno. How do you call yourself a detective?"
"Oh, and I suppose you have some kind of logical hypothesis that explains our current situation?"
Dr. Rosamond Carter did, in fact, have a hypothesis.
She claimed that the fog was electrically charged with molecules of unknown origin. It was possible, she claimed, that these particles were causing some kind of reaction with the brain during REM sleep. I took samples of the molecules, Rosamund said, and found it odd. Regular fog water molecules are composed of hydrogen, ammonium, nitrates, sulfates, and chemical ionization, along with organic acids and trace metals. She walked over to the window overlooking the dense fog outside. But this fog has none of these molecules. Hell, if I didn't know any better, I'd say this wasn't a fog at all, but rather something else. Some kind of alien gas of some kind. Which is breath, Reno said. Rosamund rolled her eyes. No, damn it, nothing supernatural. I've read something like this by Stephen King, Violet said. I nodded. Yes, The Mist. That was a good novella. I glanced out the window. I don't think that's what we're dealing with here. Why can't you all see that this is God's punishment? Father Evander said, shaking his head. Our dreams reveal our true selves, and all of us here have sinful selves. Rosamund sighed. Great. One idiot is superstitious and the other is a zealot. She turned to me. So what about you, Mr. Corbin? How ridiculous are you? I'd say I'm ridiculous enough, I said, starting for the door. Where are you going, Monsieur Corbin? Violet said, to get a closer look at what we're dealing with. I spent over an hour wandering throughout La Sierre and found nothing but abandoned houses and businesses. Then I tried to leave the village by going out into the woods and walking as far away from La Sierre as I could. And just like Violet said, after about 2 to 3 hours of hiking through the dense fog and trees, I was back at the village. Nothing worth of note happened during that time except for one thing. The sun was frozen in place. By the time I returned to the village, it should have been twilight. However, the sun was still out and fixed at a 1 o'clock position. As I made my way back toward the cathedral, I could hear the echoes of Ray's voices going back and forth. Rosamund was screaming incoherent nonsense and throwing Bibles onto villagers and the floor. When Father Evander tried to calm her down, Rosamund punched the priest in the face and told him to go burn in hell. May God forgive your sins, Father Evander said, rubbing his cheek. I've had enough of this shit, Rosamund said. I'm leaving. But there is no escape through the forest, Reno said. You will only find yourself back here again. Rosamund laughed. Oh, you stupid, stupid man. I figured it out. She walked over to the pulpit. Don't you plebeians get it? Dreams aren't coming to life. We are the dreams. We're dreaming right now. She chuckled. And as you all know, the only way to wake up from a dream. No, Rosamund. Father Evander said, running toward the pulpit. Stop what you're doing! This is not a dream! Rosamund snarled. Oh, go and bother a little boy, why don't you? And leave me the hell alone! Rosamund climbed onto the edge of the pulpit and did her best to perform a forward flip onto the ground. What she ended up doing was no flip, but rather a faceplant onto the hard concrete floor. In the end, it was gravity that gave the physicist a punch to the face, breaking her nose and opening her lip. Father Evander and Reno carried her over to one of the pews and, with the help of a villager who was a doctor, tended to her injuries. Violet shook her head. She's acting like Mia, always jumping off things. Who's Mia? Oh, Desolé, Violet said. Mia was my son. He died long ago. His dreams took him. I'm sorry for your loss. Merci. Violet crossed her arms. He was an active boy with such imagination. She smiled. Oh, I love that about him. How old was he? 12. I nodded. A good age for a child with an active imagination. Oui, Violet said, smiling. I agree. It must have been all those books he read that fueled his mind's eye.
I'm sure, I said. I'm glad your son was a reader.
Violette rubbed her arms up and down.
Oui.
After a brief silence, I said, may I ask who the mountain man was?
My husband, she said.
Tamash. I miss him dearly. He died around the same time as Mir, and when I dream, I see him from time to time.
I see. That must be difficult.
Monsieur Corbin, do you have any idea what is happening here?
I'm not sure, I said. I'm still working on it. Violette shook her head.
Oui. I may have to go to the office again to see if I can find another who can help us.
Good idea. I wasn't honest with Violette, dear listener. I did have an idea as to what was going on in the Ciel. While nothing worth of note took place out in the forest during my hike, there were some things I noticed other than the frozen sun. The first was the lack of animals and insects. I've been to many forests throughout the world, and the one thing that's noticeable is the amount of life that exists throughout a forest. But in this forest, or rather, version of a forest, there was nothing. It was dead quiet. The second was the details of the forest flora. There were many trees and shrubs and the like, but none of these moved. They were stiff and felt wrong. There was no texture or softness or crunch to any of the leaves. Also, the sound of snapping twigs was off by several fractions of a second. Either my hearing was off, or something was up with the details of the forest. Of course, it could have been the eerie fog that was to blame for such irregularities, and I would have leaned toward that guess had it not been for what Rosamund said about the makeup of the fog. It was also off. Everything was off. It was almost as if we weren't meant to solve the mystery of Lucia. After the gears and cogs in my mind rotated, I decided to walk over to the doctor who had helped Rosamund.
Doctor,
I said, how long have you been a resident of Lucia? The doctor looked at me with a blank expression.
You know,
he scratched his head.
I'm not sure.
He gave a nervous laugh.
I think I've lived here my whole life, but for some reason I long for home. It's the strangest thing.
Quel est ton nom, docteur?
The doctor chuckled. I think I'm supposed to know French?
He shook his head.
I'm sorry, what are you saying?
Nothing, doctor. It's quite all right.
There was an American accent that accompanied the doctor's speech, and it was clear he didn't understand a word of French. He wasn't from Lucille. In fact, as I glanced around at the villagers with an examining eye, most weren't of French origin. It was in their voices. Each villager had faint but distinguishable accents from around the world.
Señor Corbin, Father Evander said, would you care to join me in prayer?
Sure, Father, I said. But first, may I ask, how many villagers have you heard speaking in French?
Father Evander thought for a moment.
I don't know. I haven't paid attention. I don't think anyone really. Maybe a few of them.
A scream shattered the silence of the cathedral. Rosamund stared in horror at a bald man who was standing over her. He was robust and speaking to Rosamund with his head turned to the side and inches from her face, wide-eyed. He smiled at her, revealing razor-sharp teeth and a slithering tongue.
No, she must have fallen asleep, Father Evander said.
We both started running toward Rosamund, but it was too late. The robust man had been into her forehead and was chewing away through flesh and bone. Rosamund's body twitched like prey being devoured alive. When we came upon the robust man, he was slurping her brains into his mouth. He looked up at us and smiled that razor-sharp smile. His eyes had morphed into large snake eyes.
Dios mio, Father Evander said, giving himself the sign of the cross.
God,
The robust snake man said, has left this village long ago. Only darkness dwells here now.
I pulled out another dream catcher and threw it at the robust snake man and watched as he vanished into the willow hoop within seconds. Father Evander placed his hand over his mouth. I can't believe what is happening here. Can this be real? He made the sign of the cross again. Dios mío, estamos condenados. We're not damned, Father, I said. What happened? Violet said, running into the hall. She looked over at Roseman's corpse on the front pew. No, she fell asleep? I'm afraid so, Father Evander said, dropping to his knees. I shall say a prayer for her soul. Violet nodded. We will need something stronger to stay awake. I will go out into town again to find caffeine pills. She started for the doors. I think I saw some at the apothecary. Reno nodded. Oui, that's a good place. I remember always finding what I needed there. You know the layout of this town already, I said. Oui, of course, Reno said. I've lived here my whole life, I think. Right, I said. If you'll excuse me, I think I will help Violette with her search. The fog had grown thicker. Visibility was reduced to an arm's length. This made tailing Violette difficult. Therefore, I had to rely on my hearing. While she may have been quick, her footsteps on the cobblestone roads betrayed her position. I followed the echo of her steps all the way to her house. Violette Lacroix's residence was located on the farthest point across the village. It was a moderate two-floor Gothic-styled home. Several windows adorned the front facade. It wasn't long before I saw a light flicker on the highest window. I made my way inside. It was convenient that the majority of the house was aligned with carpet. It made my deadening of my footsteps a lot easier. When I reached the attic, I could hear Violette speaking. It's okay, my darling, she said. Eat as much as you want. I will lure in more cattle for you to feast on. Memo, I'm so happy you are eating. I peeked over the stairs handrail and saw Violette sitting on a bed. There, lying before her, was a rotting corpse of what was once a child. Decomposition had turned the skin leathery. The face was sunken in, more bone than leathery flesh. Violette, I said, approaching the bed. You cannot keep this up forever. Monsieur Corbin, she said, turning around, wide-eyed. What are you doing here? How'd you find me? I followed you. Violette looked at her dead child and then at me. No, no, this is not what you are thinking. You must stop this, Violette. Your son is gone. This corpse you are harboring here is not Mia. It's something else. I glanced at the corpse. Your son's body has become what's known as a somnia ghoul. A somnia ghoul, dear listener, is a vaporous creature that invades the body of a dying person and possesses the decaying body. Think of a humanoid made entirely of vapor. You can't see it, but you can feel it. And you have, dear listener, felt the somnia ghoul. If you've ever experienced a sudden chill or shiver throughout your body, then a somnia ghoul has passed through you. But don't fret. The somnia ghoul cannot harm you if you're awake. This only happens if you're dying and dreaming at the time of death. You see, somnia ghouls, as their name entails, are bound by the dream realm, meaning they exist in the dream realm more than they do in reality. They're a bit of both. Therefore, a somnia ghoul can only feed by bringing forth the dreams of their victims and turning those dreams into reality, corrupting it, and using that dream to devour the brains of their victims. Violette shook her head. You are lying. Mule is alive. His mind lives. He's gone, Violette, I said. This corpse here is the somnia ghoul, and a strong one at that. This ghoul has clouded your village, your mind, and is wreaking havoc at the expense of the living.
Violette started to bite her nails. The original villagers of your town are dead, right? You fed them to the Samia ghoul, and now you've been seeking help from others around the world. You've been luring food for your ghoul. I will not let you take mail away, Violette said, opening the nightstand drawer and pulling out an ancient revolver. You will leave, or I will kill you. I can't leave, I said. The Somnia Ghoul has trapped all of us inside its web. Then I will have to kill you, Monsieur Corbin. She aimed the ancient gun in my direction. I'm so sorry, but you should have just stayed away from my house. That's an old gun, Violette, I said. The chances of it firing accurately is near zero. There's a higher probability it will backfire on you. Violette started tearing. I will not let you harm my baby boy. Your baby boy here has tried to kill you several times, I said. The melting man. That wasn't the first time you've had one of your dreams turn against you, was it? Miel is learning. He just has to remember his mama. Violette squeezed the trigger and the gun backfired. Her hand was partially blown off, and the heat from the gun's explosion scorched her face. I was going to go help Violette, who was on the ground screaming in pain, when the room was suddenly filled with fog. The Somnia Ghoul must have summoned all its current dreams and brought them into the room. This meant that the Somnia Ghoul had injected its fog into the cathedral and turned the fog into a sleeping agent to extract the dreams of the remaining living there and brought those dreams here. Of course, this meant the fog in the room had also turned to sleeping gas, but the micro nose plugs, the ones I had supplied before I ever came to La Ciel, kept any of the chemicals from affecting me, hence the appearance of the dreams. There were several people and animals present in the room. It didn't take long for all of them to degrade from recognizable forms into monstrous creatures. One of them, a deformed deer, was the one the Somnia Ghoul was speaking through.
Leave me, the ghoul said in a raspy voice.
I pulled out a pen. I'm afraid I can't do that. You've taken enough innocent lives. It's time for you to sleep. I click the pen thrice. During my walk through the forest, dear listener, I had also planted several charms, small bags filled with acorns that were infused with Merlin's sleeping spell. You see, Pimpon Forest was the place where Merlin, King Arthur's advisor and magician, was tricked by one of his, Merlin's, lovers, Vivian, and put into an eternal sleep. Some say he was placed into a tree, while others say he sleeps in a cave somewhere in the forest. And to this day, Merlin continues to sleep. In case you're curious, dear listener, Merlin does sleep in Pimpon Forest. He sleeps inside a large tree, and due to Lyle's regulations, that is all I can say. The pen activated the infused acorns and began to spread through the vaporous fog. Within minutes, like anesthesia entering the bloodstream of a patient, the nightmares before me, the ones that were seconds from attacking me, began to fade into obscurity. It wasn't long after that the Somnia Ghoul was put to sleep. And once the ghoul was placed into the internal throes of Death's cousin, the fog that had once plagued the village of Le Ciel, the fog that acted and served as the Somnia Ghoul's blood, began to lift.
I'm so sorry, Violette said, her complexion a pale sheet of paper. I never meant to hurt anybody. I just wanted my son to.
Violette passed into the hereafter. Why is it that you wanted to meet me here, Talku? I said. From out of the room's walls, Talku stepped forward. You knew of my presence here, Talku said. Quite impressive. What is it you want? To understand the thing called the human consciousness, the soul.
I turned to Taku, who had been stalking me ever since I entered the village. He still looked like a metallic human, featureless, save for his shining metallic skin. To understand the soul requires one to understand suffering and love. Like her, Taku pointed to Violette's corpse. Yes, she suffered and loved, but she got lost in her suffering to understand her love for her child. She thought what she was doing was out of love, but, in fact, it was out of selfishness. Taku nodded. Humans are complicated in emotion, but still simple in thought. For the most part, yes. Taku turned to me. Kai, the yokai known as Tamamo no Me wishes to strip your world of its soul. I've seen what she's done to this world. Unlike your kind, I can see the past, present, and future at once. And if Tamamo no Me is left untouched, your world belongs to her. Humans will be enslaved to her bidding for eternity. I nodded. I figured as much. To stop her, if you and your agency so wish, will require you to end her in the past, present, and future at once. Taku stuck out his hand. A metallic bar emerged from his palm. This device is known as the Regulator. It will allow you to perform such a task as I have explained. He handed me the Regulator. I leave this in your hands. Why help humanity, Taku? I said. Your planet and all its inhabitants are an intriguing experiment, Taku said. There are things here not seen by my kind. The soul, for one. Until my creators see the data I have sent them, it may be worth keeping this planet active until my creators decide what to do. Thank you, Taku, I said. Will I see you again? That may be up to what your kind calls destiny. Talku's metallic body turned into small orbs that flew out of the room at lightning speed and vanished into the sky. La Sierre, a once beautiful village, had become a forgotten place to time. Those that were alive in the village during this agent's presence, such as Detective Reno and Father Evander, as well as the doctor and the few others, were returned to their rightful homes. Due to the Somnia Ghoul's fog, these individuals had no recollection of their time spent in La Sierre. Dr. Rosamond Carter, however, was declared missing and presumed dead by Oxford authorities. The village of La Sierre was officially deemed an abandoned village by Lyell's director, Patrice Landless. It wouldn't take long for nature to reclaim every inch of La Sierre, and it would become a hiking attraction to any hikers who came across it during a deep woods hike. Of course, if any hikers should come across this village, there was a good chance they would forget its existence once they returned to their everyday lives. Talku's warning and intel about Tamamo no Me was accurate. She needed to be stopped. This agent gave the Regulator to our Lyle scientists and engineers who have studied this object. The technology used to create it was beyond anything found in our world and within Lyos, but our team quickly learned from it and found how it worked. With the green light from Patrice Landless and equipped with the Regulator, this agent was assigned a task to search and confront Tamamo no Me and end her reign. We all dream every night. Dreams are what guide us during our darkest times. They encourage us to push forward with our lives. Without dreams, humanity would be lost and jaded. However, there is a darker side to dreams. Perhaps we can all call these dreams nightmares. Hamlet knew the danger involved with dreams when he said, "To sleep, perchance to dream."
Aye, there's the rub. While dreams can save us, they can also cause fear. Take Violette Lacroix and the living dreams of her village. The dreams that walked in reality were corrupted and transformed into nightmares, just like Violette. She allowed her dream of keeping her child alive to consume her, turning her dream into a nightmare. We must dream to push ourselves forward, but we must not allow ourselves to get lost in those dreams, for if we do, then they will be corrupted and become the nightmares that devour our souls.